beyond art, beyond beauty, beyond storytelling, even beyond thought, there lies a vast wasteland. In it, you'll find the dull nothingness of the inactive mind. This is the great cosmic plane across which the obstinate and incurious wander. Past that, you'll find the Transformers movies, five of which were the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier. I appear to have murdered my co-hosts with that introduction.
That's perfect.
What hilarious solemnity.
I was torn between that, like that was my second draft. My first draft was, I'm not writing an intro, this movie doesn't deserve it. Number one movie in America.
Also, that would have been very valid and right on target.
Yeah, yeah. And what I won't do, ordinarily, this is the point in the show where I flip to the previous week's episode and I'm like, here's two thing from the movies of my co-hosts. And I'm like, no, I'm not calling these people I respect Autobots or...
appreciated. Hi, I'm Camila.
I'm there's, Robin.
There's Camila and Robin. Man, what a way to go into our 50th episode.
This is so unfair. I am still reeling from all of this. I'm just in disbelief at why, Tony? Why, Anthony? Why would you do this?
Here's one thing. I think I teased it wrong last week. When I said, I think this is where we figure out why Merlin, though.
Dude, stop. No. We need to stop trying to make sense of these.
I waited the whole movie, like...
Me too. I thought maybe there'd be an after credit sequence.
Because Stanley Tucci was there.
Right.
I was like, and he's going to say, actually, I'm Merlin. Surprise! But here's where I got that confused. One is, I think I had read in some Wikipedia, like, this is where they establish the Dinobots.
Mm.
The ancient Transformers that turn into dinosaurs instead of cars. That is established in Age of Extinction. But I think I conflated that with seeing Stanley Tucci on the cast list.
Mm-hmm.
And then the credits roll and I'm like, you have recognizable actor Stanley Tucci playing two different parts in two consecutive movies for no reason at all. What? How did that happen?
I mean... I truly have no idea how it happened. I spent the movie assuming that it would be explained at some point and then saying, this guy's not acting like Merlin. I don't know. I also would like to say that I said that we would find out why there are dinosaur transformers. I don't feel like we found out why there are dinosaur transformers. No. It was more like there just are.
Right, exactly. This is the introduction of them. There's no explanation about them. Let's move on.
Right. They're ancient warriors. I know that because Optimus Prime says it four times.
Ancient warriors.
That's not an explanation. I mean, it maybe goes back to that thing we were saying about the medieval Transformers, how they couldn't transform into cars. Maybe they transformed into horses. So I guess they transformed into dinosaurs. I refuse. I'm sorry. I keep doing it because it's my nature, trying to make it make sense, but it never is going to make sense.
It's not going to make sense. If Michael Bay were to sit down and talk to us about this, it still wouldn't make sense.
And like, from the biggest level to the smallest level, and by the smallest level, I mean, how did Mark Wahlberg's accent get to Texas? What? You guys, I think this is a fucking Transformer. What are you doing?
The beauty
you
is
have, you own a ranch.
Right. I've been trying to I was watching the honest trailers and the everything wrong with Transformer movies to try to help me understand what the fuck is going on in these movies. And then one of them, they call him a Bostonian Texan, Boston Texan, Mark Wahlberg, Which, yeah, I don't know. Is he supposed to, whatever.
Wait, are there dinosaurs? What happened in the first scene?
Dinosaurs.
Yeah, real dinosaurs, non-transformer dinosaurs, are being wiped out by the arrival of whatever transformers are. Oh, I guess they're just called transformers. Autobots are a breed of transformers. Right. So transformers show up on Earth, who knows why, and they kill the dinosaurs.
One. There could have been dinosaurs in this movie and you only kept them there for 1 minute of a 3-hour movie. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Try to at least understand what is cinematic.
Clearly not right. Enough dino content in this.
No.
No. They looked worse than Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
21 years prior. But
everything looks worse than Jurassic Park, including Jurassic World.
Very true. Are we meant to understand, to at least address one of our 50 questions about this movie, is that why there are Dinobots? Because whenever the Transformers first showed up on Earth, it was the age of the dinosaurs, and so they took the form of the big intimidating thing that was there when they showed up, and that's why there are still some Dinobots.
I will accept that.
Yeah.
Cool. Great. We got that one done.
Check.
All right. Are we going to recap this?
For all the rest, I'm sure, in immaculate detail that will help us make sense of everything that occurred.
Lies.
Here's Camila Adams with this week's 60-second recap, and go.
Dinosaurs. Someone finds a White Walker dragon. Mark finds an Optimus Prime in an old movie theater. Jailbait. I make a bowl of cereal. Kelsey fucking Grammer? The CIA tries to kill a Transformer. Mark fixes a Transformer. I put away my grocery order. The CIA come looking for Optimus Prime. Mark and company are on the run. I go to the bathroom. Stanley Tucci is harvesting Transformia and is a magician? Oh my God, I can't believe we're doing this again. Mark and the child molester infiltrate Tucci's place. I upload a few podcasts. Optimus Prime and a man-made Transformer fight. There's some sort of existential crisis. Mark's daughter is taken up on the mothership. Look, does it really matter? There are boobs, slow motion, explosions, robot aliens, and fast cars.
Perfect.
Yeah, that does it.
I tried to understand what was happening in this movie, but I could never get a grasp on it. And the
42
whole thing,
seconds on as thorough a recap as anyone needs.
And, boobs.
boobs. And when you guys are talking about the whole Merlin thing, and I addressed the fact that Tucci is a magician when he gets the whole Transformia business, I am really trying to like connect that dot there. Like, like he's an ascendant of Merlin. And this is a trans. So how is he able to manipulate it with his hands and mind?
The thing any sufficiently advanced science appears to be magic.
How is he able to manipulate it with his hands and stuff in his mind?
It's Transformium.
I thought unobtainium from Avatar was the dumbest name substance. Nope. No, there's Transformium. I bet this is what was actually supposed to happen. I believe this was the intention. There's a whole thingy in the fifth one, in The Last Night, that was like, only a descendant of Merlin can hold the stick, or whatever the fuck it was.
Right.
Maybe that was supposed to be this Stanley Tucci character coming back in, which, because he's obviously the same guy, so, oh, it's you're a descendant of that guy with the same face. And then, for whatever reason, in, rewrite 72, they were like, no, make it the hot lady instead.
Maybe? Sure.
I'll accept it.
Yeah.
They did spend a weird amount of time towards the end of this movie, giving Stanley Tucci a hero arc, right. Which yeah. I was like, I don't care about this guy. I don't care about any of these people, to be clear, but I care less about him.
And Camila was right to point out all of the things that she did to try and survive the 3 hours. I realized that at a certain point that the idea of just looking at the TV had become absurd. Maybe for half an hour, 45 minutes, I kind of dutifully paid attention. Mm-hmm. And then it's a little more into the laundry folding and the checking email. And at the 2-hour mark, I had done all of those obvious things. And then I was like, well, what am I going to do now?
Right. You know what I did? Literally stopped watching it and waited until tomorrow's round of doing things while I watched it.
Because the idea that you would just sit and watch this is I can't do that.
No.
It's not anywhere near engaging.
Exactly. It was just all too much. My plan was I was going to watch it in several 30-minute increments throughout the week, but I never got around to it. And I kept putting it off. And then finally, I had to start it at like 8 o'clock last night, and I was like, fuck. So now I got to sit through this. And yeah, you're right. Like, the same, the first half hour, I was like, absolutely paying attention, really trying to get a grasp on what was happening. But at 31, I'm like, you know what? I can't do this anymore.
Well, here's what happened with facts. We're talking about Age of Extinction. I don't know if any of us have said the name of it to this point.
One of those Transformer movies.
All right.
It's Transformers Age of Extinction, the fourth one. Last week was the fifth one, The Last Night. Age of Extinction, the fourth Transformers film, was released June 27th, 2014, the 20th number one movie of the year. It won its debut weekend with just over $100 million. There were no other major releases that week. The runners-up were 22 Jump Street and How to Train Your Dragon 2. Both were in their third weekends. It is a two-week number one. It repeated the next weekend. Next weekend was the 4th of July weekend. Made another $37 million that weekend. There were new releases. None of them really hit. The Melissa McCarthy movie Tammy was in second. The Possession movie Deliver Us from Evil was in fourth. The kind of also ran children's movie Earth to Echo was in sixth. So nothing that was going to knock it off the top spot.
Quick pause. Robin? Did you just say that that there was no major release the 4th of July weekend?
No, it came out a week before 4th of July weekend.
So were people clearing 4th of July for more Transformers fallout at this point? Like, it's the fourth one. Or was there just something weird going on? That just doesn't make sense to me.
This was the first one that wasn't like a calendar clearing hit.
Okay.
It still kind of was. But no, like at this point, no, nothing wanted to go up against it. Even really in the second weekend.
Wow.
Because the one before this had made $350 million after, I think, $110 million opening. So they were like, the second weekend of this will be a $60 to $70 million movie. Mm-hmm. Wasn't quite that much, but it looked like you didn't want to get in its way. So they did counter programming instead with a comedy, a horror movie, and a kids movie.
Mm-hmm. All right. Wild.
Yeah. It finally lost that top spot the third weekend to Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which I already forgot is the second one. It still sounds like it should be the first one. The Age of Extinction went on to earn $245.4 million. It was the seventh highest grossing film of the year. We've covered a lot of this top 10 now because Mockingjay Part 1 was the second highest grossing film of 2014 and the Lego Movie was fifth. We did all of the movie-to-movie performance of the Transformers series last week, so go back and listen to that if you want. But as a reminder, this did drop more than $100 million, or rather, this made $100 million more than the fifth film, The Last Night, which was last week's topic, and Age of Extinction did worse than every prior Transformers movie to that point. The first three all made more than $300 million. The second one made more than $400 million. This was a drop. The Last Night was a bigger drop. There is also a pointless controversy over how much this movie made in its first weekend. Reports came out at the time that Universal just fudged the numbers so they could say they got a $100 million opening weekend. They didn't. It's like $97.5 million.
What?
Yeah, like there are websites that count it at, as 97.5 and don't buy it. Not to get into the weeds, but there's like one place that reliably gives numbers for something like 98% of theaters,
right,
that had it lower.
And then they use that as a statistical model.
Right. But more than that, it would have had like at all of these ancillary theaters, because if you're not tracked on this, you're like in a strip mall somewhere. Assuming that it made $100 million assumes that every showing at every single other theater sold out every time.
Right.
Basically, they could have had, we made $97 million and were like, no, just lie and say we made $100 million.
Yeah.
Because wait till they get to the numbers for the next one. There'll be no hiding it. It is worth noting in the second week that we've covered Transformers, these are much more global hits than they are North American hits. They make good money here. They make wild money elsewhere. Age of Extinction made $1.1 billion as its worldwide total. This movie that we just watched is the 29th highest grossing film of all time in the global box office. And Dark of the Moon, the second one, is 27th. It's something about how they're like, you don't actually have to like even kind of follow along. Yeah, that makes it translatable into every language, I guess.
Right. Punchy, punchy robot, Universal.
Yeah. To clarify a question, kind of, from the previous episode, are the Transformers aliens or robots? They're both. just quoting from a Wikipedia page that has that flag on it that's just like, there's too much information that no one cares about on this page.
I hate that flag. I always want that information. I also hate this plot summary is overly detailed. Do not deny me those details of horror movies I'm too afraid to watch.
According to Wikipedia, quoting directly, the Autobots are benevolent, sentient, self-configuring robotic life forms. They are a synergistic blend of biological evolution and technological engineering. The exotic materials that make up their composition is a living metal with a self-replicating cellular structure and genetic code. They are robots that are also alive.
Sounds like a bunch of bullshit to me. But yeah,
definitely.
So does that mean that they exist on their own? Like, they don't fuck to procreate?
I was thinking about the robot procreation, too. I'm glad I'm not the only weirdo.
So it's just like, hey, here's some matter, some big words, big word, scientific jargon, matter, and it's going to
maybe
itself
like
together.
Trees? Maybe you take a cutting of one Transformer and it grows into its own Transformer.
Yes.
So I opened an incognito window and Googled, do Transformers fuck? from the Transformers wiki, the vast majority... you want to talk about an overly long page.
The vast majority?
the vast majority of Cybertronians reproduce asexually. But how exactly a new Transformer is created, given life, and introduced to the world is a complicated process. A process that often plays a key role in the origin of their species and culture. Even if individual methods of reproduction of... Who gives a... who are these people
and care
this much about Transformers?
That's a lot.
Mythology.
Like, that's a lot. And have we seen any female robots? Transformers? Besides the
other
mother
Gemma
of the...
Chan's character is sort of a, well, she's definitely a Cybertronian, but I don't know if she counts
the one
as a Transformer.
From, the one from the fifth one that,
yes,
is like the goddess or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So there's one evil lady and a bunch of male coded robots voiced by male actors.
Cool.
The short answer is they probably don't fuck, but it's complicated.
Yes, I like Robin's
tree
theory.
I'm going to go with
my cutting theory. Yeah, I like the tree theory.
To wrap up the Faxi segment, speaking of male actors, I guess this is interesting. Peter Cullen, who is now 79 years old, has always been the voice of Optimus Prime.
Wow.
He was the Optimus Prime in the 80s cartoons and came back when the movies happened. So you
Good
are hearing pretty much the only Optimus Prime.
And they also have the same, whatever the other one is called, the bad guy.
Megatron?
Yeah, that's... Sure.
God, I hate myself for knowing that.
But one of my notes on this...
I thought it was Liam Neeson. I had to look it up and found out it wasn't. But for a while, I thought it was Liam Neeson.
I also was like, which famous man is doing this voice? And eventually looked it up and was like, oh, wow, they did the faithful to the source material thing.
Right.
Or, I don't know, the source, they made toys before they made a TV show, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It started as, we're here, six movies, all of this, because someone went, it'd be cool if you could fold up a robot and it was a car. That's what we're starting with. Peter Cullen also voiced Monterey Jack on Rescue Rangers is one of his big credits. But the other one, which is relevant, the only thing that he has played almost as often as he has played Optimus Prime is Eeyore. He's usually Eeyore in Winnie the Pooh stuff. And that, I mean, I know this is not the biggest problem with this series, but like, Optimus Prime is like a total charisma void. He's not funny.
He's so
not
serious.
Interesting.
Yeah.
He's not inspirational at all. And I was writing this down and I was like, who is this guy? Eeyore. That's why. Because he's a sad donkey.
That's
like
crazy.
Okay. I will say, though, that most of my points for this movie derive from Optimus Prime riding a T-Rex like a horse. And... even though I think that Optimus Prime is a boring, meaningless character, and I'm confused why there are men approximately my age who care about him, that is undeniably cool. Also, it reminds me of an improv meme that I love, where it's like an improviser is like a little cartoon, and it's like what I actually do, and it shows a bunch of men in plaid standing around, and then it says what my parents think I do, and it shows a stand-up, and then it says what I think I do, and it's RoboCop riding a unicorn holding a lightsaber. So yep, Optimus Prime riding a T-Rex like a horse. Can't help it, I like it.
Finally, to move the MPAA up to the bottom of the faxy segment, because it's been floating. Transformers Age of Extinction was rated PG-13 for intense sequences of sci-fi violence and action, language, and brief innuendo. I'm calling bullshit this week for two reasons. The T.J. Miller death scene was horrific.
Yeah, that was a bit much.
I mean... I was like, yeah, get that guy. He's the worst.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was totally warranted. Like, yes, it was welcome, but it was like, damn, wow, this is a bit much here. And then to see
really
his ashen skeleton just like still post.
That was... and then later when Galvatron, when Galvatron starts like killing civilians on screen, like he slices down the middle of passenger cars and is like crumpling crowded commuter trains. If those things are in your movie, it should be rated R. I'm not suggesting that they put out an R-rated Transformers movie. I'm saying they could have cut those things. Mm. But with that in there, this rises above PG-13 for me.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's pretty fucking harsh.
I think that this is comparable to other overly violent PG-13 movies. So I don't think that this is like bullshit. I think that the core of the amount of violence we allow in PG-13 movies is bullshit.
Yeah, but that still means that it's bullshit.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's unanimous.
I accept your
I'm counting it. I'm counting it as
yeah.
3-7 is the overall. All right.
Can we talk for a second? Can you confirm for me? Because I feel like I made this up and it didn't really happen. Did Jack Rayner's character have consent laws laminated in his wallet?
Yes, that has been like the big fucking thing for this movie. Like, that's all I can think about. First of all, a motherfucker is gonna come to you he's dating your daughter. He is definitely like several years older than her. He's gonna pull out a fucking Romeo and Juliet statutory law laminated in his fucking wallet, and you do not end his life right then and there. How, Sway? How? Like, I don't. And second, is Michael Bay on a watch list? Because this is like the
he
fucking
needs to be.
Like, seriously, why is this in the movie? It's insanity. And the girls are getting younger and younger in each fucking film.
Right. Like, this girl, she was 19 when they made the movie. She looks like a pageant child.
Right.
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 Like, she looks like a child wearing too much makeup and with bad self tanner. Yes. Really bad self tanner. I was like, they should have rechecked their color temperature fixing. Solely looking at her face. She looks like the president. It's upsetting. But also, she has a child face. A child face. And she is so sexualized. It's so gross.
I have never seen a movie work so hard to both sexualize and desexualize a child simultaneously. Because she is disgustingly sexualized. There are 8 different shots of her ass in Daisy Dukes. They have TJ Miller call her hot to her face.
Right.
Like, they take a lot of time to be like, isn't this child sexy? But 20 minutes of this movie is spent on this absurd thing where it's like, you're not old enough to date. It's like, she's 17 and she's dating someone who's 3. Yeah, I mean, he's 20, but like, they're 3 years apart.
Right.
They haven't even implied that they've had sex. They're just like, Mark Wahlberg is like, you don't get to make out because you're a child. Like, no, it's 17.
And like, he's like, I'm celibate, so you should be celibate too, which is weird.
Like,
yeah.
No one on that set, I mean, it's all up to Michael Bay, but like, no one is like, we can't simultaneously like focus in on her thighs and then have 8 minutes of like, you're too young for sex.
Exactly.
Like, what kind of a weird,
you're familiar?
An object. Oh my God.
There's a rhetorical device called apophysis. This is one of my favorite words. And it means bringing something up by saying that you're not going to bring it up, right? Like if you're like, and not to mention the tax credits, right? As a way to change the dialogue. So it's about tax credits. So it's like their cover in this case, right? They're like saying she's too young for this, but we're that in that way we get to do close-ups on her thighs.
Oh my God.
That was troubling. I mean, it was.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. No.
Sorry, everybody.
It's gross.
I'm broken.
It's gross.
The whole
I truly, I was cooking yesterday and I was like, that couldn't have really happened.
No.
I made that up.
And they show it. They there is a shot of it on screen close up and it's just and there long enough for you to read it. And it's like, what are you trying to do here? Like, what exactly is your end game, Michael? Like, I don't understand. Like, are you trying to, like, anybody who is that familiar with the statutory laws and
it's true.
That's not a lawyer. That's just like, immediately. Like, no, there's no fucking way. Get the fuck out. No, I can't. I'm not doing this with you.
A little siren should just pop out of the top of your computer if you Google the statutory laws. Like, if you had to ask, no.
Let's just tag it across the fucking board. If she's under 18, leave her the fuck alone. It's like, I don't give a shit about, you know, everybody random states is like, oh, the age of consent is 14. The fuck it is. Not in my house. It's not like Michael fucking
Bay. 2 weeks in a row, everybody.
So the rest of this movie is just pure garbage. It's hot trash.
It's terrible.
I was trying, and the best thing I can say is that for the first half hour, it's a little less actively bad because it's kind of on rails. There's a little setup.
I totally agree.
There's a little setup with the dinosaur. Then we're in Texas. He finds the thing. The only glimpses of the government we get are in direct response to the thing that's going on with our main characters. It's not good, but it doesn't have the problem that it'll have later.
It's manageable.
It's coherent.
Yeah.
It still doesn't make sense, but it is not overwhelming how little it makes sense.
Yeah,
and then also it has the same aspect ratio. Makes a huge difference.
But then, yeah, somewhere like around the 40-minute mark, then the rug gets pulled out from under me. And
that
like,
is also true. Yes, it definitely becomes less coherent as it goes on.
You don't get to introduce a main character after an hour. The movie was too long.
Yeah.
Stanley Tucci didn't walk in for an hour.
And then the whole, his introduction was...
so weird.
Yeah. Like, really verbose. Like, I
don't understand
like
that character, even if I accept that he is the same actor who plays Merlin, and we don't know why, that character doesn't make sense.
No, it does not. It's really weird to see. And again, like, with Anthony Hopkins. Like, Anthony Hopkins is, like, the one-up. It's like, if I had seen this one first, he'd be like, how did you get Kelsey Grammer? Like, so poised, so sophisticated, so dapper to come in and be like an Autobot. And then I would have been like, the next movie is like, wow, there's no way you can one up this one, Michael Bay. And then Sir Anthony Hopkins shows up in the fifth one. How?
Kelsey Grammer is really good at saying sinister things in an elegant way.
Right.
In like, a way that makes him sound like a classy evil person.
Like I love him. Like I don't like any freaking role. Like it's like, yes, sure,
yeah.
Kelsey, come on, welcome.
Up to and including his actual personality as Kelsey Grammer.
Right.
As an evil person who does delicious evil with God. I mean, this is Sideshow Bob. Like at a certain point, Sideshow Bob and Kelsey Grammer just became indistinguishable for one. Sideshow Bob ran for mayor that one time. Like like straight talking conservative. Like they're the same person.
But also
more
just
thinking and less whining.
Random shout out though to Kelsey Grammer because he's done a lot for Black women in Hollywood, like Girlfriends. He produced that show, and like
this is news to me.
Yes.
And I am a Girlfriends super fan.
Yes. So just a shout out to
so
him
that's
for that
great.
Yeah,
that's good to hear. So thank goodness, man. I am so excited about Girlfriends coming to Netflix because I haven't seen it since it was on, which was a really long time ago. I'm thrilled.
I bought the series like when Kaj was born, and that was one of the shows I was binge watching. Oh, and I'll like this thing is like full of like these really bizarre one-liners, and it's the same, I guess, throughout all of them. But the one that really stuck out to me is when Supertan CIA agent comes in and he's like, "Do you even have a warrant?" And he's like, "My face is my warrant." What? What does that mean?
I don't... I mean, the only time I ever heard someone say "my face" as a metaphor that worked was my ex's grandmother was trying to buy a lighter, and at Target you need to show ID for a lighter so you don't smoke. And this guy said, "We have to scan your ID." And she said, "Scan my face, honey." That one worked.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I like her.
I like that a lot.
But when we get, like you said, after that hour mark, it was almost more frustrating than the last night. The last night is probably slightly worse, but it's almost more frustrating because there was that 25 minutes where it was like these Boston Texans found Prime and the government's looking for him because they're trying to round everybody up, and that's the movie. But then we get into 8 different plot developments, that none of which added anything or were necessary. They're trying to find Prime. These people have Prime. That's all we need. Not like the whole second other plot about trying to build Transformers we control.
Right.
You only get 18 different stories if we care. Like, if this feels like anything, and it doesn't, but it feels a little like Infinity War and Endgame in how, like, there are all of these different things happening and they don't, you know, it gets off on tangents. But in those, we had 15 previous movies of background to earn that.
Right.
It's actually kind of similar to like the Zack Snyder DC movies, where it's like, you didn't do the legwork to make me care about this weighty, bloated thing.
Right.
I kept thinking about Marvel movies because I know that there are film critics out there who complain about those movies being visually incoherent and just flashing lights and bright colors and constant camera movements and too many edits, too many cuts. And I never feel that way watching Marvel movies. Right. I always feel like, yay, the movies! You know, that's I love Marvel movies. And so I was trying to second guess my own reaction to the Transformers movies as maybe me, you know, going in harshly, and I go in with goodwill with Marvel. But I think you're onto something with Marvel has good characterization, right? And if you care about the characters, you're emotionally invested in a way that any visual shortcomings aren't that relevant.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a big difference if you care about the characters, because there's a lot of things in different movies and TV shows that I have overlooked because I was so invested in that character, because it's like it makes a big friggin' difference. And I can't even tell these characters apart because, you know, they're Autobots or Decepticons or whatever the freak, and Mark Wahlberg. And, you know, we have this random dude who, like, I don't even think this boyfriend was a necessary character in this entire
thing. Super unnecessary.
Like, he was just there, like, just mucking up the works. Like, it was just one more storyline that was unnecessary in this whole process.
He had an accent sometimes.
Yeah, that was another, like, was he really Irish?
That's the actual actor situation, where he is Irish and has Irish parents, but mostly grew up in the States. So that's dumb. Probably, if anything, sounds more American in real life, but that's a real thing.
I mean, and why didn't we just address it? I mean, what the hell? What's another half hour in this movie to just go ahead and, like, let's expound on that? I know that he talked about being Irish, but I mean, like, I don't know if anybody was like, hey, your accent is kind of come and go.
Right.
It's not that when you're calm, you sound like a leprechaun made of Guinness, and then when you're yelling, you sound like you're from Texas. Like,
typically it goes the other way.
Right, exactly.
When I was in Ireland, I knew a person who, like, spent her summers in America and spent the rest of the year in Ireland. And when it was the beginning of the school year and she was just back from America, she had 90% of an American accent. And by the end of the semester, she had 90% of an Irish accent. It, like, ebbs and flows. It's not situational.
Right, exactly.
Don't worry. That guy has a rough time in Midsummer. So just assume it's the same
character. Oh, that's
character.
Right. Yeah.
It is situational in a way. People do get anyone who's like controlling their accent, right? If it's like, oh, I unlearned my accent for professional reasons. Right. When they get emotional, it pops out.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I don't know. I'm the type of person that if I'm around somebody with an accent long enough, I'll start talking in their accent.
That's true.
I knew a ton of Americans when I lived in Cape Town who had lived in South Africa much, much longer. And it's fascinating which words creep in and which pronunciations creep in. Like my friend Kristen, she's from New Jersey. She says tomato now. So,
yeah, I've been trying to fight the Pittsburgh accent for years.
Like Yin's is good, though.
Every once in a while, a hass will fall out, and I'm just like, ooh.
I'll occasionally go, get at, instead, no, no.
Sometimes I say needs cleaned, or that structure of verb.
Speaking of structures of verb, like, when, I know, I mean, why not?
What an elegant segue.
Right. Why not? When people say, and I think, and I've realized that this is kind of just a Pittsburgh thing, when someone says, they don't do that anymore, or that's how it is around here anymore. Like me, I've always found it as to be the negative. Like, I don't do that anymore. Not that's how it's done around here anymore. You know,
I completely agree with you. This is one that I think I will never break. Like, I started calling it pop within my first semester at college. When people say any more in a positive sense, my brain breaks.
Thank you. Same. And that's all. It's just like there's a hard break that happens in the conversation. In my brain, I'm like, I can hear nothing else you have to say.
I mean, if you wanted to stop talking about Transformers, we could have just moved on. We didn't have to like sidle into an accent.
Sorry, it just happened. But okay, back to Transformers. Do inventors?
No. Let's stop talking.
Did you say do inventors fuck?
No.
Because Mark Wahlberg talks a lot about how he's an inventor, and he talks a lot about how he doesn't fuck.
Actually, I was gonna say, do inventors actually call themselves inventors?
I don't think they do it as much as Mark Wahlberg does.
Only Homer Simpson in that one episode where he became a big fan of Edison.
There was that whole thing in the 80s where like a bunch of movies started with look at the dad's wacky inventions, right?
Yeah,
like that's in Gremlins, like right. That's the whole plot of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I feel like it's in other movies too.
Yeah, and Sean, you maybe jokingly asked us to say if we could find five things that were different in this film.
Oh, please.
I did not find five. I found three.
Okay.
His friend is different. TJ Miller.
Different buddy.
We actually see his daughter on screen.
Yes.
And China.
Yeah. We were in China for a while.
Yeah.
Because that's really the country these movies are for. I imagine they were pleased. So what happened to his... I know that we definitely don't remember two Transformers movies ago, but was it addressed why, like, the major character that was the daughter of the main character disappeared between 4 and 5? Did he say, oh, my daughter's... Oh, she's off at college?
Yeah.
And then there was also something where they're, like, limited in their communication because he's maybe on the run from the law?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. Because she called him or he called her, but he couldn't talk to her. Like, she did all the talking because of voice recognition, and then they'd be able to trace where he was.
Because anonymous teenage actress who can't really do all that much, they called her and was like, do you want to do another movie? And she's like, no, I'm good. I don't.
It's like, I don't.
If I never
so.
Work again, it's fine.
She was on Bates Motel, and I hated her in that, too. She's not a very good actress.
She's a weird face.
She does.
Good in this? I mean,
was anything good in this?
Was anyone good in this? I guess Tucci. Kelsey Grammer.
Mark Wahlberg is doing what Mark Wahlberg
right.
does.
Yeah,
if you like that, you will like him in this.
Right. And I don't know. I was talking about this with Dan, and we were sort of watching it, and it's like, I don't know if I dislike Mark Wahlberg or if I I don't know what my feelings are about him.
I feel like he's very polarizing, and yet I know I've had this conversation. It might have been this conversation with you when we watched Painted Gain, where
maybe.
It's just like, yeah, I kind of like him.
Right.
Right. Like, I don't hate him.
Right. But it's also like, I don't know if I need to see another Mark Wahlberg movie for a while.
Right.
He's that kind of charming where, like, you don't want him around unless something is going wrong. Like, you know the specific kind of person that's like, if we get to the hotel and they don't have the reservation, that's the guy I want talking to them. Like, right. That's Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. I also loved him in The Departed. Like, I think that was an incredibly worthy Oscar nomination. Like, honestly, I haven't seen Dreamgirls, so maybe Eddie Murphy was better. But I feel like he should have won based on the other four contenders.
I mean, there are some times when it's like, yeah, you know what? We did need Mark Wahlberg in this. There's some characters that it's like only he can play. But I don't, maybe it's just this fucking Transformers movies that are just really souring me on the whole thing. And did they have... They had playing cards made of the Transformers.
So, okay, the one last thing that I want to talk about a little bit is the whole really poorly drawn War on Terror parallels that they throw into this. Mm. And I am afraid to say I'm curious what happens in the third movie. Because, Tony, I don't mean it.
Damn it, woman. I swear to you. Corona be damned. If we pull the third one, I am coming to your house.
Come to my house, bring a jar of coronavirus. But seriously, they talk about Chicago was leveled, but they also say 1,300 people died, which is the opposite of how last week they said millions will die.
Right.
I was like, 1,300 people die every goddamn day in this country right now.
Right.
And no one's doing anything differently. They won't even wear a mask.
Yeah, I have no idea. And is this the first one that Mark Wahlberg is in, or was he in the last one as well? So Shia was the first three, and then Mark takes over.
Right. And Haley Steinfeld just gets Bumblebee, and probably one for that. The odds are so low. I'm just saying, I know anything can happen. The odds were low of us getting two in a row, but like, we can't get the original because I vetoed it. We've established that if we land on something that has already received a veto, it's out of the running, like a movie that we've already done.
Yes. So there's two left in play.
There are two in play, and dear God. Let's rate Transformers Age of Extinction. I added 1 point for when TJ Miller got hit in the face with a football. But then I took that point away for alien spaceship reflected in the bean in Chicago. So 7. I landed on 7. Ooh. A full 2 points better than the last week's movie.
Mine is also 2 points better. I went with 15, and 5 of those points, like I said, Optimus Prime riding a T-Rex like a horse.
Mine is lower than last week's. And 3 points are for just Kelsey Grammer in general. So it's 13.
13. If I better at mental math, I would tell you we're probably about the exact same thing, which again, feels right. Cut this.
Right. This is like a hair better for me.
Because of the T-Rex.
It's a hair.
And the aspect ratio remaining the same throughout the film.
And TJ Miller getting hit in the face with a football. It's in fact, it is 1 point better. Last week we had a 10 and 2/3. This week we have an 11 and 2/3. Which, man, does that feel accurate? Like this is statistically better and nothing else. Nevertheless, that leaves these two Transformers movies as the two worst movies we've ever reviewed. Feels right. Feels right. To the bingo card, I got so mad when I realized that there was a stand-in for an on-screen president. Like, there was a guy making the calls, constantly referencing the president. So not only everything else that Tony has done to hurt us this week, he picked a movie that seemed like it should have gotten me a bingo.
Yeah, when he's like, okay, Mr. President, I'm like, oh, this is it. We're gonna take it to the president. No, we're not. Where's the president? No, and nobody goes to get coffee at a fucking coffee.
I was gonna say that was like the thing that I had my eyes peeled for. That won't even give me a bingo, but I desperately. So are we getting?
And nobody's hacked anything. There's not one computer hacker in this movie. Damn it.
No, they just broke into the place. They at various points they needed access to Stanley Tucci's secret lab, but like they just broke in. Yeah. That as established in the Underworld episode, if you have to go to a place, it's not a hacking.
Boo!
Unless it's a family vacation, the family did leave home.
No. I don't think it counts.
No. Nothing. No additional squares. No. By the way, when they blew up that farm, I was like, This actually solves several of their problems, and like they're like it's they're good, they're going to be evicted.
Right.
They owe like not if it blows up.
Right.
Like you're fine now. That's like they should have been like, "Whew, we dodged a bullet."
Exactly.
All right, nothing on the bingo card, still no vetoes in play. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Camila, do we get to talk about Host together?
No, I didn't get a chance to watch Host, but I did I watched two new to me movies. I watched a webinar, a discussion between Gina Prince Bythewood,
I think. Bythewood.
Bythewood.
I want it to be, I said on this on the Theronathon, I want it to be Gina Prince by the wood, so that she sounds like a high fantasy character, but it's Bythewood.
Bythewood, thank you. And Casey Lemons. And it was like a really great discussion between the two of them, like these amazing Black women filmmakers. But this led me to watch Talk to Me, which is a movie from, I want to say 2017, maybe, or 14, I don't know. But starring Don Cheadle, and it's about, which I found out later, a real life disc jockey who was an ex-con. He got famous as a disc jockey, and then he turned into like kind of this activist in the 60s, 70s, the 70s. And yeah, it was really good. Like I would recommend, like this is a great movie, and it was really well done. Don Cheadle is amazing. Taraji P. Henson, and also the guy from 12.
Do we tell Edgeofor?
Yes, thank you. He plays his manager and like disc jockey best friend buddy or whatever. Cedric the Entertainer is also in it. It's just a real
good cast.
Yeah,
wow.
And I forget who else. Who is like? Oh, the Sheen, Martin Sheen is in it, and he's really good too.
His 80th birthday yesterday.
Was it?
Yeah.
So I would highly recommend that. And I also watched also New to
Me. What is it called? Sorry, Talk to Me.
Talk to Me, yeah.
Prime
right now.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's so good. And I watched Dark Places with Charlize Theron.
With Charlize.
Yes, because I just finished the book, reading the book by Gillian Flynn. And I decided to watch I wanted to watch the movie. I wanted to read the book before I watched the movie.
Yeah.
It was all right. Like the movie was the book was good, and I hate that whole, you know, the book was better, yeah, blah blah blah. But I just wonder if I would have enjoyed it more if I had not read the book. I had a hard time buying Charlize as that character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did not read the book. When I watched the movie, I was like, this seems like it was a good book.
It was. It was a really good book. But yeah, I just had a hard time seeing her as that character of Libby Day, who was like this little broken girl who like witnessed her family be murdered and lived this horrific incident, and be like the kind of the reason why her brother is sent away to prison for rest of his life, who's played by Corey, Corey, the guy who was in Ant-Man, bald guy.
Stoll? Is that right?
Yes.
Tall guy who played Yellowjacket in Ant-Man.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And you know what? I am finding myself oddly attracted to that man as of late.
A lot of people have said that. I don't. He has a very intense presence.
Yeah, and
which is attractive in some ways.
Right. And this is also like a really good cast, and we do a lot of like this was the child, and this, you know, doing flashbacks as children, and then we see the adult, and they did a great job casting people who looked like. I do see this person as growing up as her or whatever. So
I think I'm trying to remember this. There's another movie with Charlize Theron called The Burning Plain, I think. And it is similar in tone, and it also has flashbacks. Charlize had this traumatic event in her life. Let's see her be a sad grown up in some of the scenes and flashbacks in other scenes.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, am I thinking of that one?
Maybe. Yeah, it was just weird. I mean, I get her as tough and all that stuff, but it just didn't strike me as that she was good for this role. And I was just wondering, I didn't look into it, but did she bankroll this movie?
It's her production company. Her production record is pretty solid, right? But she has some missteps, and I think it's fair to say this is one of them.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
But that's
it's one of those movies where I'm like I said, like, this seems like a good book. Like, there's things about it that I liked. I immediately was like, Abby Feuder, you should watch this movie. This is your jam. If you really like true crime stuff, I think you might like this.
Yeah.
Me speaking to our other listeners.
Right, because there's that whole element there of like these, like the whole purpose is that she meets up with this kill club who they're people who are obsessed with true crimes, and they're like out to try to solve them. And you know, yeah, I think that there's an element that can, there's some part of anybody who's like in, who's all about true crime and all that stuff, that some, at some level, like we all like, yeah, it would be great if I could just solve like one of these cold cases or something myself. But yeah, like me, like I don't want to do the legwork for it. I'm not trying to go ask people questions about shit.
That sounds hard.
Right. That's a lot. I'll just, if I can figure something out by listening to your podcast after you've done all the work. Well, that's that.
Well, Host is so good.
Is it?
If you don't know what I'm talking about, there's a horror movie. I think it's officially not feature length. Robin, is feature length 71 minutes or something?
So it depends on who you ask. I believe that 60 minutes is the threshold for Oscar consideration.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
So this is 54 minutes. Like, you will have people saying, okay, that's not a movie. It's totally a movie. Considering, sure, we'll count it. It's presented as one Zoom call about a bunch of friends who decide to have a seance during their quarantine. And it was filmed over the past couple of months. It was filmed with the director never being in the same room as the cast, and the cast like having to set up their own effects and set up their own scenes around them because they were in quarantine in England. So, you know, they were serious about the quarantine. And with that gimmick, like, it didn't have to be good. It would have been like, oh, well, good for you. Cool. Oh, it was so interesting to see a whole movie unfold on Zoom. And then I'm 20 minutes into it, and I'm like, holy shit, they did a good job.
Oh, wow.
One, the genius just struck me. It's like a seance and a Zoom call, somewhat ineffective ways to contact people who aren't actually there.
Right.
The same thing.
That's deep.
I love that. And then it uses a lot of, you know, a lot of this is out of the Paranormal Activity playbook, obviously, with, you know, this camera angle, which looks like just a normal everyday camera angle, but it's scary because there's something scary going on in the background or out of the corner that you can't quite see. It's so much more effective because it's the way we're interacting with the world right now.
Right.
And it was legitimately like jaw-dropping scary at a bunch of points. I was like, oh no, this is a movie that will make you afraid of your house.
I was just gonna say, like, what would you do? Like, you're on a call and you see something fucking wicked in the background, or someone's telling you, hey, what's that behind you? Who's home? Nobody.
No, thank you.
Mildest spoiler, but it was in my review. One of the oh shit moments is she accidentally kicks on like goofy face filters, and then walks into another room and a face filter appears because it's on somebody that isn't really there. Oh,
oh my god! I'm so glad you told me that it's like an hour, so I can totally watch that today.
Also, like, quick correction: 40 minutes.
Really?
40 minutes is a feature?
Official Academy Awards designation of a feature.
Ah, well, then this is a feature. I always thought I thought it was much more. I thought it was like 72
minutes.
Me too.
I was thinking like 74 was the... That's wild. Only 40
I minutes. Definitely make fun of movies that are less than 80 minutes long as being barely a movie. I'm very cranky about the length of movies.
Oh, I'm so happy when something is incredibly short.
Oh, like, I love a good 90-minute movie.
Right.
And honestly, I love a good 80-minute movie. I just want to be obnoxious and make fun of it.
I liked that a lot. I saw Unforgiven, which I had never seen. Winner of four Oscars. I liked it a lot, like watching it at the drive-in and like having a very nice, relaxing time. You know, if I had put it on in the middle of the afternoon at home, it maybe wouldn't have hit me so effectively. But it's good. I wouldn't get too deep into its politics, but, you know, it's got really great cinematography and Western things.
Morgan Freeman's really good in it.
Mm-hmm. I'll give this away and Robin can cut it if she wants.
I'm not cutting it.
Sometime after that, I was like, I looked to see how many Best Picture winners from my lifetime I had not seen, having just added Unforgiven. And I was like, Robin, there are seven guests. And because Robin is an expert both on Oscar movies and assuming what I have seen, she got six out of seven.
Oh, correct. Wow. That is impressive.
Yes, I was like, why would I cut something that I am truly proud of?
Right, that I would clearly come out on top.
It made me feel nice, like in a friendship way, like, oh, she knows me. But also it's just like, man, she knows these things really well.
Wow, and off like the top of your head, like you didn't have to look at a list of...
Oh, I mean, I could go back to at least 1970 just by memory. And if I have time to sit down and think about it, I'm confident that I could do every Best Picture winner in order.
Wow.
With maybe like... In the 30s and 40s is where I get a little shaky, right? Yeah. Like, is the best years of our lives before or after the Lost Weekend, right? Like, I don't know.
That's acceptable.
But yeah, I thought about it. The one that Sean was impressed that I got was Schindler's List.
Hmm.
I thought about it. I didn't see Schindler's List until I was a little bit older because it's long. It's like 4 hours long and it's really horrible to watch. Like, it's a brilliant movie.
I had to watch it.
One of those things that you're like, you're never like, you know what I'm in the mood for? You know.
I had to watch it in a film theory class. So that's the only way I saw it.
I remember they did that thing where Ford sponsored it airing on network television. They were like, we're sorry that Henry Ford was a Nazi. We're going to make you, we're going to let you watch this anti-Nazi movie commercial free. And I remember wanting to watch it then. That would have been the first time I saw it. And my dad was like, I'm not watching this. he had seen it and he was like, I never need to watch that again. And so I didn't watch it then. I think I eventually watched it in high school. We took the VHS out from the library. It was on two VHS tapes.
Good days.
I'm sure it's very good. I feel like I should. But
it is very good. And you should. That's the
answer. Yeah. There are a few in there that I'm like, I don't know when I'm going to get to The Last Emperor. Like, I don't know when.
The Last Emperor is also good. You don't need to watch it.
what was it? You probably still know. It was Out of Africa, The Last Emperor, Dances with Wolves, Schindler's List, English Patient.
Seems to be a theme.
The one Gladiator. I missed was Gladiator.
Gladiator's the shocking one.
That is shocking. Right. That's so good. You should totally watch Gladiator this week.
Gladiator's awesome.
Are you not entertained?
I started hating Russell Crowe at an early age. Like, I had just crossed the threshold, like, maybe I was 14, 15, into where my parents were just, like, considering me capable of going to whatever movie they were going to. And they took me to see The Insider.
And she is so good in.
No, he's not. He barely moves or modulates his voice. Like, that was the source of all of this. I was like, you're not even really acting. You're just
face acting. Hidden intensity. Speaking of which, I watched First Cow this week.
Yes, tell us about First Cow.
I loved First Cow. I am on the side of the other film critics. I loved First Cow.
Everybody's me. So.
Yeah. Hang on. I'm going to listen to Missy say his name again so I say it right. Magaro. Yes. So maybe that'll get on mic. John Magaro is very good at face acting and hidden internal intensity. I also loved Orion Lee. I've never seen him in anything else, I don't think. I don't recognize him.
No, I didn't recognize him either.
He was very charming. And this is a movie that, like many other movies I've enjoyed over the last 5 months, it is a movie that I think I liked more because of our experiences in the pandemic with quarantine. So this is, you know, Frontier Oregon. And everybody loses their mind because they're making biscuits with milk, right? It's like, this is the most delicious food I've had since I left home, basically. And so that whole element of like small comforts becoming everything under hard circumstances really resonated with me. The part where he says that Ryan Lee's character says Toby Jones won't suspect them because some men think they're too important to be have people steal from them. I loved that. And then also just a lot of it is about like loneliness and friendship, and that also matters to me more during the pandemic. Anyway, loved First Cow.
I didn't dislike, like, I probably gave it like a 7. Like, I liked it, but I was just like wistful, very wistful, very wistful, and careful pace. Let's say a cautious pace.
My one criticism is enough with the weird square aspect ratio, everybody. I like rectangles. What can I say?
I do really like the scene where a guy asks him to watch his baby so he can go and get in a fist fight. There's like one, there's one burly lumberjack type man who has a baby for some reason. And so he's like, here, watch this. And then goes out and gets in a massive brawl. That was fun.
He hides his fancy boots because people give him a hard time over his fancy boots. I just loved it.
Not the fancy boots.
And they're not fancy.
They're just vaguely clean. And yes. It's them.
I also went down a Wikipedia rabbit hole about turkey red dye. Anyway, first scout, the new to me movie was Heaven Can Wait from 1978. That's a weird one.
Is that Robert Downey Jr. or is that Steve?
This is Warren Beatty back in the 70s.
Totally wrong.
And Julie Christie, co-directed by Warren Beatty and Buck Henry, written by Elaine May and Warren Beatty. And it is a wild one. That is a weird movie. And I went back and read some contemporary reviews because I was like, what is up with this weird movie that was nominated for so many Oscars?
I was wondering, why did you watch it?
Because of the Oscars quest. Right. And all of the reviews reminded me of reviews of Knives Out, where they were like, they don't make them like this anymore. Huh. So it was that they don't make them like this anymore in the 70s.
So it feels like the 50s?
Yeah, it has some like screwball elements to it.
Okay.
But Diane Cannon is great. She deserved her Oscar nomination. What? I don't know if I'm correctly pronouncing her name. I couldn't ask Missy to say it.
Did Missy's friends with the guy from First Cow. For the listeners that don't already know this. Is this the one that like directly influenced Far From Heaven?
No. So Far From Heaven is influenced by the old Douglas Salk movies, which are like dramas. This is a comedy.
Okay.
It was a remake of a previously Oscar nominated movie called Here Comes Mr. Jordan. And then it was remade as Down to Earth with Chris Rock, which I haven't seen. So
that's Down to Earth is the second movie he co-wrote after CB4.
There's another Best Picture nominated movie called Heaven Can Wait from the 30s, and I don't know what it is.
But Far From Heaven is really good.
Far From Heaven's great.
People don't talk about that enough. No, what's his is
Todd Haynes?
The actor is Dennis Haysbert, right? Who is in the Allstate commercials?
Right. The president on 24.
My mind had just refused to acknowledge that the president on 24 / the guy from Far From Heaven / the guy from Allstate commercials is also Pedro Serrano from Major League. My brain would not make that. And when I watched Major League 3 weeks ago, I was like, wait a minute. And like looked it up and it still won't connect.
I saw him in something older, like around the early 90s recently, and I recognized him by his voice more so than his face.
Anyway, I think what's happening here is we're just having a nice conversation and enjoying our time.
Right,
because
exactly.
We know we don't have to talk about Transformers anymore.
I know, it's true.
Well, let's draw a movie. Oh, wait, let's not.
Oh, that's right.
Robin, tell them what's going on.
All right, so I work at the Arcade Comedy Theater, Pittsburgh's only nonprofit comedy theater. And one of the things we do for fundraising is we have a silent auction every year. And as you may have heard on this podcast, we offered a guest spot on our show. You may recall we had a School of Rock episode. We had a guest in Dan to talk about it. And this year we have two winners.
Really appreciate the interest in this. We put it up thinking, yeah, someone will pay a couple of bucks to Arcade to hang out. And it became one of the more popular items to the point where Arcade's like, can we do two? Because there are a lot of bids. And that's really nice and flattering. So thank you.
Thanks, guys.
And our first winner is none other than Addie Twig.
Addie the Twig.
Who you may know from our theme song. She is the beautiful voice singing the words number one.
Wait for it.
So you've heard her every episode singing. Not only that, you heard her every episode singing when it was You Can't Handle the Truth, because she sang that theme song too. And she appeared on You Can't Handle the Truth a number of times. I haven't mentioned this in a while, and it's one of my favorite facts. You Can't Handle the Truth was a no swearing podcast until Addie came on and I forgot to tell her. because like for the first four episodes, we were like, well, you know, we won't swear and then we don't have to click that explicit tag and it, you know, gets sorted differently in iTunes. And I mentioned that to the first couple guests and just forgot to tell Addie. And she was like, this fucking bullshit. Immediately, I was like, ah, it's a swearing show. It's fine.
I don't know how people, unless you are talking about a family friendly subject, like why just make it explicit?
For a while, yeah, I tried.
You were talking about bad grandpa too, so like it's fine.
For a while, I tried to make mine non-cursing because I was like, "What if my mom hears?" But then I realized my mom's not listening to my podcast, so I was like, fuck
"Parents
it.
Don't understand." I'm like, my mom always is like, "How do I listen?" You click on the thing, right. And I'm like, "But I clicked on it and it didn't work." Never mind, it's fine.
My mom on one of my podcasts, and I had to send her the actual like file. I'm like, "Here, just listen to it like this."
So thanks to Addie and the second winning bidder, John Greenlee. We will be scheduling with John a little bit later on in the year, probably put about a month in between them just so that we get some random draws in the middle. But thanks in advance to Addie. You know, when you win this, you get to pick the movie from everything on the list. And you could use that to torment us, as Tony has. But Addie did not do that.
Bless her soul.
Her first choice was Alien. So we are watching timeless classic, many would say one of the greatest horror films, if not one of the greatest films ever made, Sigourney Weaver in Alien. Always happy to revisit it.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen it, so this will be good.
So we will not be drawing a movie. We will be discussing Alien. Tony, you are on the bench, okay?
We're on notice.
We're not keeping you in the game. If you're going to keep throwing up bricks, take a few minutes off.
Exactly. We have Steve Zahn sitting in line and wait, wanting to take over.
Transformers, man, it's the last time I have to say that word out loud for a while. That's great. What's that?
For at least 2 weeks.
At least. Yeah. Released June 27th, 2014. What was the number one song in America when Transformers Age of Extinction hit the top of the box office charts?
Iggy Azalea?
Correct. In the first guess.
Is it that Fancy? Is that the name?
Fancy.
Mm-hmm. Fancy. That's about as far as I go with where Iggy is concerned. I'm like, I couldn't even sing the song for you. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. It wasn't like when she got canceled. Like, it wasn't a problem because she didn't add, like, right. The hook is the good part of that. It's right. Iggy Azalea featuring Charlie XCX, who is still here and, right. And still, we're fine with her.
Yeah.
And like, the hook was good, and then there was, like, you know, there was an overly intense Australian lady rapping in between the hook.
And that's the pop music shade we're ending on this week?
Apparently.
Number one movie in America.